Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 105. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive web Steelers site on the internet, and David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. Dave, Terrell Suggs, minicamp, bounty gate, junior Seau's passing. The sun never sets on the NFL.
It's a year-round now, boy, thanks to social media and all the info that you can get at a push of a button. But it's been a busy week for sure. And, of course, the Steelers minicamp, rookie minicamps get started today. So where would you like to start, David?
Let's start with the Steeler minicamp. Let's get that out of the way. That's kind of a nuts and bolts type of thing. I guess it sounds like, looking at on Twitter, Mark Cabali's saying there are 40 people there at minicamp. This includes, obviously, the undrafted free agents, the drafted players, some guys who were never on the roster. A little unclear to me because he said Corbin Bryant is there at minicamp, and we talked about him in one of the previous podcasts having dressed, I think, for one of the games against Arizona on the 53-man. So I'm not sure exactly what the restrictions are in terms of who can attend and who can't attend. But and then there's some guys who are there on basically a tryout basis. Darren Thomas would be the biggest name in that group, the quarterback from Oregon State, obviously a high-profile college player, but a guy who went not only undrafted on the 300 and some plus people who were drafted, but then each team signed 10 or 12 players to come as undrafted free agents. That's another 300 plus guys. So he didn't get a contract amongst the 600 guys who got contracts. So he's a long shot type of guy, but another body to fill out the roster there.
Yeah. Also passing on the news today, Cabali said Darnell Stapleton, of course, he's a younger brother. Desmond Stapleton, I should say, the younger brother of Darnell Stapleton out of Rutgers, reportedly failed his physical and has been removed from the roster. Also working out in those tryouts, in addition to Darren Thomas out of Oregon, as you mentioned, is SMU defensive back Chris Banjo, LSU long snapper Alex Rushin, and offensive lineman Corey Bouserzak out of St. John Fisher College, where I have no idea where that is. All I know is 6'3", weighs 300 pounds. He's also in for a tryout. And to get back to your thing about the 40 players there, I'm not very sure. I'm going to have to check out the rules on this, but I think it's players that did not end the season on the 53-man roster for the Steelers. That would probably make more sense. So, in other words, you would have the drafted players, the undrafted players, the players that were signed to future contracts over the offseason, and any practice squad carryovers that were signed back to the 90-man roster this past offseason. So, one person, there was some confusion this morning. Ed Bouchette reported that Baron Batch was not cleared to practice yet, and he was not taking part in the mini camp. So, or in the rookie mini camp this weekend. Batch fired back on Twitter saying that he's not required to be out there. So it's not that he's not cleared for practice, it's just that he's not required to be out there.
Right, and that's still a little confusing to me. Now, when he says not required to be out there or wasn't invited to be out there or not allowed to be out there, three different things there. So I'm not quite sure. I'm thinking Baron Batch probably didn't mean not required to be out there, meaning he probably can't be out there or he would be out there because I can't imagine he'd turn down that invitation. So I'm guessing, you know, if you were on the injured reserve, that probably counts you toward the 53-man as opposed to against the 53-man. So I'm guessing he's not invited to be there.
Yeah, I would think that's the case, but and we'll have to check out what the CBA says as far as this goes. You know, very possibly being as how he did get a accrued season for being on the injured reserve last year. It's quite possible that these rookie camps are designed for players that do not have any accrued seasons. So, you know, that we'll have to check the CBA for that. And Alan Gifford, I know you're listening out there, so I expect a full rundown of that of the CBA later today with that. You know what?
And Dave, this is a good time. I mean, you know, you and I do the airwaves, but you have a lot of people who do a lot of writing there. And this is probably a good time maybe to just mention some of those people so that everybody can hear those names.
Oh, yeah. We have, you know, a couple. Chris DiMarino has been contributing. Jeremy Ritz contributes to me. Christina Rivers contributes writings to me. Alan Gifford, he and Nick Ricchetto, of course, everybody knows Nick has sat in for you a few times on the podcast. Both those guys do a lot of my charting stuff for me once the season gets going and all like that. So, those are guys that definitely help keep Steelers Depot ticking. Alan Gifford does a lot of grunt work for me, looking up stuff in the CBA and stuff like that as well. So I certainly do appreciate all those all the efforts of those people there.
Yeah, we're just the pretty faces in front of the microphone. So good to get those names
out. Speak for yourself.
So Dave. So the Steelers are going to go at it this week. You know, it'll be relatively quiet. There won't be a lot of news coming out of there. And we expect some of the Steelers to be a little bit more available, some of the young guys, in terms of interviews. And we'll probably start to hear from Adams and DeCastro and some of these guys in the media a little bit starting next week. I know when I was doing the show this week, the Steelers made a point of not making people available to the media until after this week's minicamp. So I bet there's a little bit more of not just on the field stuff, but a little bit of media training and things like that going on over there on the south side this week. The big news, I don't know. What is the big news? When I was doing the show, we kept having big news every 6 hours. But the tragic news of Junior Seau, dominating news of the Bounty Gate story. But let's get back into the AFC North and Terrell Suggs tearing his Achilles tendon. Now, we don't know the severity of the tear. As I've said time and time again, the last person you want to give a diagnosis and prognosis of their injury is the player themselves. Terrell Suggs likes to think that maybe he'll be back sometime mid-October or November. History suggests otherwise. This is about the time when Willie Colon tore his Achilles tendon and was out for the season 2 years ago. I would bet against it, but, you know, we'll never know or we'll find out when this all gets done. And he's supposed to have surgery sometime next week. But, Dave, this is a guy, 2011, 70 tackles, 14 sacks, 7 forced fumbles, 2 interceptions, 2011 Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, that's a tough blow for them. And, you know, I've got a foot surgeon or a foot podiatrist or something. I think he's a surgeon, commented on the blog that said, you know, even if this guy's back, he's not going to be the same person. Also, a follow on Twitter who's a vascular surgeon as well, Melanie, has let me know that she thinks that it would be he'd be hard pressed by checking with some of her cohorts there in the hospital and all like that perform that type stuff that you know, if he is indeed back, say around, I don't know, week 11, 12, 13, right around in there, he's not going to be the same player the way they use that Achilles and all. So, you know, I guess it all depends on the player. It all depends on the severity of the tear, as you said. But, you know, if he does indeed make it back from what we're hearing from readers on Steelers Depot and all like that, like you said, he's going to be hard-pressed to be, you know, effective at all.
Right. And obviously the Ravens can go ahead and put him on PUP because this is not a training camp injury. But the problem with that is after 6 weeks, then they got to make a decision. He'd have a couple more weeks, hypothetically, where he could get back to practice. But I think after 9 weeks – they'd have to make a roster spot for him. So
actually, the way that works is that he's out 6 weeks, and then somewhere within the next 3 week period is when he practices. When the day he resumes practicing is when the next 3 week window opens. So if he starts practicing, say on the final day of that, to my understanding, on the final day of that 3 week first window, he has 3 more weeks from that time. I believe to get put on the 53-man roster on IR. So right around week 12, the start of week 13, most definitely they would have to make a decision on him. And as you said, he's not, you know, you're going to pay for him salary cap wise anyway. Why not use the PUP, being this did not happen in training camp? You know, why not use the PUP to your advantage just in case? And that's what I fully expect the Ravens to do with him when he shows up at training camp.
Yeah, and I hope people had a chance to listen to the show yesterday, the Joe Bendel show. I had as a guest Jerry Sandusky. I'm sure he feels like that's not the name he wanted to have with the way things have gone over the past year. But this guy's the play-by-play man for the Ravens, and he's fantastic. And he was a great interview, about 10 minutes. If you go to 970ESPN.com under the Joe Bendel page, you can hear a podcast of that. But, Dave, he spoke about what they're going to do. And the Ravens, you know, they're a little shorthanded now, obviously, at linebacker. No matter what they do, they're not going to replace Terrell Suggs. They lost Jared Johnson. Is that the guy's name?
Yeah, Johnson.
Yeah, they lost Johnson to free agency. So they had Paul Kruger, and Paul Kruger was a guy who might have hypothetically stepped into that role. And, of course, they traded down in the first round, and they got. And now it looks like they were very prescient in taking Courtney Upshaw with the 35th pick, the linebacker out of Alabama. So some combination of those two guys will fill those two roles. Sergio Kindle is a guy who they drafted very high 2 years ago. He's never really contributed. He missed his whole first year because he fell down a couple flights of stairs.
I hate that.
Sounded like maybe drunk as a skunk, but had a severe head injury. And then last year really didn't contribute. Jerry said on the podcast that interview that he didn't, Kindle hadn't shown the team anything, and he'd really have to step up to contribute this year. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, but that certainly cuts their depth at the position. And there's no question Terrell Suggs, in terms of turning speed into power, using his hands, he's an elite player. There are a lot of great players in the NFL. This guy is an elite, great player.
Absolutely. And, they have the other defensive lineman. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. But, if they go back to more of a traditional kind of 4-3, they could use him. I think he had a good rookie season last year as well. And as you mentioned, they drafted Upshaw there. But those are mighty, mighty big shoes to fill there for the Ravens. And you just don't replace those type of stats. Pernell McPhee is the name I'm thinking of. Was the defensive lineman that produced 23 tackles and 6 sacks for the Ravens.
And of course they have Man Mountain Cody and Helena Nada in the middle there.
Yeah. So, they use Suggs in a variety of ways. You know, in fact, there was all that fuss when he was franchised a few years ago there, where he was franchised as a linebacker and said, "Hey, no, you use me more as a defensive lineman. I expect to get that." We might see him play a little bit less of kind of a 3-4, with the standing up on the outside, and go to possibly a more 4-3 kind of look until Upshaw kind of gets indoctrinated there into the defense. So that's, either way you slice this, David, it's a huge blow. And, to think that this guy will be back 100% this year, false.
Yeah, and I did some research on guys who are still out there and available, and I tweeted kind of jokingly, Joey Porter is one of the names of the guys who's out there. But, if you're, needless to say, if you're an elite rush end, edge man, you're not hanging around in free agency right now. So the pickings are slim. There might be a guy or two that they'll bring into camp to take a look. But basically, the Ravens, the timing couldn't be worse for them. And if you're a Steeler fan, there are two ways to look at it. Look, there's a lot of respect in the rivalry. There's a lot of hate in the rivalry. At the end of the day, if you're a Steeler fan, you want the Steelers to win the game regardless. It'd be more fun to beat them when their team's fully healthy. But at the end of the day, you want to win the game. And this is something that's going to make the road for the Steelers and the AFC North just a little bit easier.
Yeah, and, no one should cheer the injury of Suggs. I've had a little bit fun with it on Twitter, ball too hard and all like that. And you should have seen some of the ones that have come across back to me at Twitter from some Steeler fans, some really good creative ones. And look, let's face it, if Terrell Suggs was wearing the black and gold, he'd be a fan favorite. This guy is a top-notch defensive player. So you don't wish anything bad like this to happen to anybody in the NFL, but it certainly does play in the Steelers' favor, the way he's not only terrorized the Steelers at times, but the rest of the league.
Dave, staying with linebackers, some tragic news this week as another linebacker went down. Junior Seau apparently took his own life with a gunshot wound to the chest. 43 years old, father of three. His last known communication was a text to his ex-wife and each of his three children that he loved them. This is really sad stuff. And I think the interesting note of this is that he took his life in the same fashion that Dave Duerson did about a year ago. The former Bears safety took his life by a gunshot wound to the chest. And the reason Duerson did that in the note that he left is so that his brain could be studied by science, because he was suffering from severe depression and maybe the early onset of dementia, some of which apparently caused by repeated blows to the head and concussions suffered from playing football. We don't know the answers to this. This is a really delicate topic. You and I aren't doctors or scientists, but say out committing suicide in the fashion that he did, and it just leaves so many questions. He didn't leave any notes, and there were a lot of heartfelt sentiment said this week out on ESPN. Guys like Jerry Rice talked about playing in a golf event with him on Monday, where he looked like he was very vibrant and full of life and in good spirits. Marcellus Wiley talked about being with him recently and asking him if he needed help because of the event a year ago when he was arrested for assaulting his girlfriend. No charges were filed against him, but shortly thereafter, he drove his SUV off a 30-foot cliff. He said he fell asleep. He wasn't injured in the accident, but there were definitely questions at the time whether he was trying to commit suicide. And now, a year and a half later or so, he has committed suicide. The book is wide open. The questions are wide open. What are your thoughts on the guy?
Wow, what, 20 years or, you know?
20 years.
You know, in the NFL, and how many headshots, you know, over the years has he taken? How many concussions were not diagnosed over those years? You hit the main points. You know, it appears, and we hate to speculate about something as delicate as this, but shooting himself in the chest, as you mentioned, possibly wanting, at least having the you know, we're for all to be concerned about having his brain studied. I think as his family has agreed to have that done, I think that report's coming out this morning as well, too, or at least they're considering that. You know, we're in this age now. We see how much the league is paying attention to concussions and all like that, the crackdown on the hits and the headshots and all like that, the former NFL players now suing and all like that. This is going to get worse before it gets better, David, because the longer these players, you know, from that middle era there in, say, the 80s and 90s, as they're starting to hit their, you know, kind of their golden age, I guess, you know, we're going to see more in this. You just don't know what kind of demons were kind of in Sayal's head that were not his fault because of sustaining concussions all over the years. It makes you kind of wonder what's in future, you know, for the NFL, if indeed when they examine the brain of Sayal and they find it was a post-concussion type syndrome that led to this. And it's very possible and probably likely that they will. You know, are we going to get into a situation with the NFL, David, where after every game, after every practice, after every game, that the players have to go through a league kind of overseen physical, concussion physical after every, you know, event like this? And imagine what it would cost the league and teams to do such a thing, to make sure after every practice, after every game, that a player does not have concussion-like syndrome. So this is going to open up a bigger can of worms down the line, I have a feeling. And, you know, headshots of any type of on down the line, whether it be a running back coming through the hole, defenseless receiver, a receiver making a catch, you know, you're not going to be able to hit them above the numbers before too long.
Dave, it is we are going to watch a sea change in the way this game is played over the next 10 years. I have no doubt. I think, you know, when our kids watch this game, they're going to see a different game of football. It's in some ways we'll find it unfortunate, but I think we're talking about player safety and the health and the you know, long life, hopefully, of the people involved in the game. I mean, Steeler fans just have to look back at the offensive linemen from the 70s. How many are no longer with us? You know, Mike Webster is the obvious, most visible tragic case, but there are a lot of those guys, and there are a lot of things going on there, whether it was the steroids, whether it was head, you know, injuries to the head. Certainly, the NFL is in a ridiculously difficult position, and I spent a lot of time talking about this, how Roger Goodell, and I, you know, the juxtaposition of the confluence of events this week was really striking. You have Junior Seau taking his life. You have the league being sued in a class action suit by hundreds of former players for not protecting them and not taking care of them. And at the same time, you have Bountygate come down, and you have, you know, fines and suspensions of current players for, you know, illicit activity, attempting to hypothetically injure other players. And so just the confluence of events was striking this week. And you have the Players Association and D. Smith also in a ridiculously hard position. He's defending these guys who were suspended. But what about the 1,500 guys that they were apparently trying to injure? How does he defend both sides of that argument? So I don't know. Roger Goodell, he's the villain here. But, can you vilify this guy? He's trying to, obviously he's trying to do and what he thinks and his lawyers and the people in the commissioner's office think is the right thing. They're trying to do the right thing. But, yeah, we may see a very different game of football 10 years from now.
Yeah, and into the Bountygate stuff and all like that. You hit on the interesting thing that D'Amore Smith has got himself in the middle of. You're defending players that are attacking other players. So, this thing has gotten to be a mess, and Roger Goodell takes a lot of flack, most definitely, and especially, some of the stuff that has come down for the Steelers. But what is the guy supposed to do here? He handed out some hefty, hefty fines, not only to the Saints coaching staff and GM and now players this past week. He's definitely sending a message that the only time you should hear the word bounty is if you spill something in the locker room, probably. I say that, kind of light, but this is a serious matter, and it's going to change the game. And these former players suing, as I mentioned before, and now with the Seau incident and all like that, you're right. The kid, people listening, kids are going to probably see a different game. Just imagine the lawsuits that they're going to have to settle coming down the pike at some point.
Yep. Yep.
It's
tough stuff. In terms of the Bountygate and the suspensions, here's the deal. One of Goodell's lines to Adam Schefter was, "We have good lawyers too." The Peter King tweeted, I think her name is Mary Jo Cabot, is an attorney who saw some of the information that the league had. The whole having the judgment passed by Goodell and then having this suspension heard by Goodell again. Has the league up in arms that there's no real appeal process. There's no fair arbitrator in the case. But apparently, and I think the key for me is Anthony Hargrove, who got 8 games, basically signed a statement saying he took part in the bounty program. He was fully aware of what was going on, and he obstructed the league and lied to the league in 2010 when they came to investigate, and he got 8 games. So the stuff they must have on Jonathan Vilma to get a season, to me, it must be a long, comprehensive list. Because, look, whether people like this or not, or if this were the Steelers or the Saints, Roger Goodell is not out against a particular team. He's not trying to pick on a team. He wasn't trying to pick on the Steelers in 2011. He's not trying to pick on the Saints right now. He's trying to do what he thinks is best for the league. Now, I'm not saying Roger Goodell is always right or all his decisions are, above reproach. But he is doing what he thinks is best for the league, and I am sure that they have a notebook full of stuff on Jonathan Vilma.
Yeah, and as you said, the judge that they talked to, I saw partial of an interview with her. She seems to think that the league's got some ironclad stuff here, So, and I don't think the appeals have officially been made yet by those players. They probably will at some point, but. I can't see this changing. I see all this sticking, kind of as you said.
So Dave, so we have those three events. Those were kind of the timeline events in the NFL this week. Any other news surrounding the Steelers? Any surprises or anything? I guess the only thing we have is David DeCastro changed numbers already. From 61 to 66, the big news there is that's Alan Faneca's old number. Interesting that they didn't give him 66 right away, or whether he requested a change. A little piece of news to file away. I liked your tweet this morning when you said, if you've already bought your 61 DeCastro jersey, you're going to have to make a change.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that kind of sticks out that I did an article on is number 78 has not been issued yet, although when you click on Travis Turner's name, at least the other day, he was listed as 78. So I had a little tinfoil type conspiracy post up suggestion that maybe they're saving a spot for Max Starks, who let me know this past week that he's back running again on that repaired ACL. But his timeline, he hopes to be ready by mid-July. And, of course, we'll talk about this going forward into the offseason if that happens. Something else I thought about when talking about these running backs this morning, David, is you know, what are the chances that the Steelers add a experienced back, you know, not a high profile name and not a guy that'd be guaranteed for the roster, but what are the chances over the next few weeks, at least heading into training camp, that they add an experienced guy like, say, a Jackie Battle, a Joseph Addai, a Ronnie Brown, Justin Forsett, Ryan Grant, Thomas Jones, that type back? Because when you look at the roster right now, let's assume Baron Batch is on course and ready to go. We have Batch, Jonathan Dwyer, John Clay, and Chris Rainey now left on this roster, and there's very limited experience with them behind Isaac Redmond. Rashard Mendenhall, I think we both can agree, is at least going to start on the PUP list at training camp part of it. And Chad Spann was released this past week. So what do you think about those chances of that happening, David?
Well, you know, those are some real names there. You read those names and you hear Ryan Grant and Thomas Jones. And you know, these are experienced guys with a pedigree in the NFL. So I certainly wouldn't rule it out. And I think you can probably look at receiver and think about the same thing in terms of bringing somebody into camp. They'll take a look at how these rookies look through the OTAs. These older guys don't need to be participating in the OTAs. It's not that big a deal when they get closer to training camp. But they certainly could bring, I think, in either a back or a receiver. And there are a lot of names out there. Like we talked about, there aren't many name edge rushers out there. But there are a lot of running backs and wide receivers who have played in the NFL and had some success. So, yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility.
And kind of moving forward with that, Mike Tomlin had said in the draft recap press conference, you know, he didn't refer specifically to the running back position, but he says, you know, as Kevin Colbert had said going forward, that you know, they were open to still addressing some things in free agency to create some you know, competition. So, you know, if any of these guys with some experience are signed, it would only probably be one more. And if that were the case, it would be the NFL minimum type thing, probably a qualifying contract to boot. And you know, that back would just be brought in to help push the younger guys on the roster to see how that shakes out. And, you know, let's not forget Mawaldi Moore is still lying around out there too. You know, on the surface, it looks like they might not be interested in bringing him back. But if, as you said, if they get in through these rookie camps and OTA sessions, maybe they don't like what they see there. Maybe he is a guy that's brought in for training camp. So definitely something to think about. I think receiver's a little bit better off, even though there's an opening at the number five position, you know, behind Jericho Cotchery there on the roster. Still not ruling out a guy being added at some point. But, you know, with the offseason names they added, including the Penn State kid, as well, you know, I just see it less likely to be a wide receiver being added and more likely that it be a running back with some experience being added.
Dave, we asked the readers to send questions over the past week or two, and we're going to spend, you know, from here till some of the next couple podcasts, we're going to spend a lot of time trying to get to these questions. We'll try to get to a couple of them every show. Noah sent in a bunch of questions here. Let me just bring up a couple of the topics to you. His first one was talking about Haley coming in with the offense, and we've heard that basically these playbooks are given out this week, so guys are getting the first look at the playbook. And we talked about Ben joking about it being the Rosetta Stone. The terminology has changed. Now the line is going to use the same terminology, so Sean Coogler and his guys are pretty much going to be working from the same playbook that they used before. Some of the blocking schemes and plays will be different, obviously. But they're going to have the same terminology. But Noah asks about the guys who are on the roster, the younger guys who may be debatable whether they're going to make the team, as in David Johnson, Batch, Saunders, Dwyer. Are they going to be – is it kind of a reset for them versus the new guys coming in who are the free agents and the draftees? Are they all going to be on a level playing field, or just kind of having a year under your belt just as a member of the Steelers and being on an NFL team still give them a significant advantage?
I think you're going to have a reset. And Tomlin made a point to say, you know, you're already handing out positions For players playing 2 or 3 down through 2 or 3 years down the line, and that isn't always the case. I think some of these younger kids definitely do have a reset. Keep in mind that a lot of these kids did not get the benefit of the OTA and mini camp sessions and rookie mini camps last year due to the lockout. So you got a new offensive coordinator in there. You've got a head coach in Mike Tomlin who won't lock anybody into the 53-man roster except for the obvious. So I think nobody's safe, especially the guys rookies last year at the bottom end, and the guys like the Saunders and the Baron Batch and all like that. So yeah, I think those younger guys do have a reset button on them again. They have to prove themselves all over again that they can fit into the Todd Haley offense.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do think having a year, just being in the league a year and being in the organization obviously gives you an advantage. But at the end of the day, this is about talent and ceiling. And so for these young guys, you just have to prove it. Hopefully, these guys have played high school football at this point, college football. They've played in a couple different systems. We're not talking about splitting the atom, so it's not amazingly complex, but they still got to learn the stuff. And the guys who are smarter and learn it more quickly, they're going to be better off and better suited. But at the end of the day, the coaches are going to be judging talent, and that's what it's going to be all about. He also asked about Myron Roll and Troy Smith, two offseason guys. Troy Smith, obviously former Heisman Trophy winner, played with the Ravens for a few seasons. Roll, the Rhodes Scholar candidate out of Florida State, who took a year off to go study over in the UK. Dave, I think these guys are non-events. They're obviously successful people. They're interesting guys to have in camp, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to one or both of them again, but I can't see either of them making the roster.
Not the quarterback, Troy Smith. I mean, let's face it, you've got Byron Lethwich and Charlie Batch in there at the minimum now, so it's not a tremendous cap hit as far as they go. Now, can one of these guys that are coming in, one of these younger quarterbacks, possibly stick on the practice squad? That's possible, but I'm with you as far as the quarterback goes. I don't think either of these young, any of these quarterbacks that are being worked out or signed in the offseason make the 53-man and be a push to even get them on the practice squad. I think I just don't see him going that direction. As far as role goes, now the Steelers list him now as a cornerback. He was previously listed as a safety and all. I think he best fits as a safety, as a free safety type.
Because he basically played linebacker in college.
Right. So that's an interesting thing, and it's going to be interesting to see some of these reports come out by some of the beat writers who are at mini camps to see where indeed he does line up. I don't think he has the blazing speed, to be a boundary type corner. I could be wrong. I mean, there's a lot of high hopes for this kid, back coming out of college. And, of course, he went to the other direction with the Rhodes Scholarship and all like that. You can't blame him for taking care of his future there first. But, he couldn't even stick on with the Titans, really, even on their practice squad there. So it would seem like unless he does a drastic turnaround, 100% committed now to football. We had him on. I had an interview with him on a terrible podcast after he signed there. But to me, he looks like a long shot, as you say, as well.
Armando writes in, by the way, we appreciate all these questions. We're just using first names. I'm sure you know who you are. So Armando writes in, asks a couple things, but I thought this was a very interesting question, Dave, as simple as it sounds. Were there better players available in round 3 when the Steelers selected Spence?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that would be my initial reaction is yeah, and I'm trying to. Do you have the draft pulled up in front of you right now, David?
I don't have it in front of me, and you pull it up, I'll tell you a couple thoughts. My thoughts are, I think the short answer is not according to Kevin Colbert. The Steelers obviously took this guy because he's the guy they liked the most. But I bet if you lined up all 32 teams there and said you have this pick at this point in time, the Steelers are probably the only ones picking Sean Spence. So it's different things, different teams looking for different things. The Steelers hadn't taken a linebacker in the first 2 rounds. It's clearly a position of need. He's an interesting guy. I think in terms of he's not the most exciting guy on the Steelers draft board, that's for sure. I mean, the other two guys are going to be, hypothetically, everybody wants to pencil them in as 10-year All-Pros. Chris Rainey brings a really dynamic skill set that's exciting. Ta'amu is somebody who you can look at and see exactly where he fills. Sean Spence, His role is a little bit undefined. He's not, doesn't have the measurables maybe that some other guys have. So certainly when you look at the Steeler draft board, that's the pick that doesn't jump out at you.
Well, you know, he's an intriguing player. Don't get me wrong. He's been the most intriguing for me as far as watching video, and I've got the third round pulled up now. And you know what? I don't know when you look at here. I mean, let's look at the picks after.
Give us the next five picks.
After Spence, you had John Hughes, who the Steelers brought in for a pre-draft visit, a guy that I think was surprised that went in the third round. Of course, he went to the Browns. Thank you, Cleveland. Defensive tackle type, who I kind of thought, maybe a fifth or sixth round guy. Nick Foles, a quarterback out of Arizona, went to the Eagles. Akeem Hicks, another guy out of Regina that the guy had some interest in. The Steelers had some interest in him as well too. Jake Bequette, defensive end out of Arkansas. Lamar Holmes, a tackle out of Southern Miss. T.Y. Hilton, who the Steelers had in out of Florida International. Brandon Thompson, the defensive tackle out of Clemson. So now you get to the bottom of this round, and then you're coming back up on the next round here, and that's when the Steelers traded up to get Ta'amu. So, maybe there wasn't. Maybe this was the best player available that somewhat fit a need on the Steelers board when you go back and look at this. So, we'll know in 3 years, we'll know for sure if there were better players on the board or not at the time. But, when you look at how these players were probably broken down by grade and what the round value was and all like that, maybe this pick makes more and more sense when you look at it, David. That's a great question.
Yeah, good question, Armando. Ken wrote back a couple weeks ago, and he was asking about Ziggy and playing the five technique and kind of where we are on Ziggy. And I think the answer is, I'll speak first to this one. I think the book is open on Ziggy. He's certainly not a bust. Let's not put it that way. I think Ziggy did some good things his rookie year. I think the step forward that many expected in this past season wasn't as big a step forward. We didn't see him dominate games at all, and at times just kind of get run over. The run defense obviously took a step back this past year versus what it's been in the previous years. So, I wouldn't call Ziggy far from being a bust. He's going into his third year, but you'd like to see Ziggy take a step forward, because I don't think people saw the production that they expected to see out of him this past season.
Clay, to me, he's going to be a five technique or nothing. More of a guy that's better suited playing the three and the four, one gap type situation. Doesn't hold up too terribly well against double teams. John Mitchell, really, I feel will be working with him hard and heavy in this season here. He's another guy that probably could have use the OTA sessions and all last year, once again, as all young players can. He's a guy that's an emergency nose tackle at best, in my opinion. And Mitchell went out of his way to defend Steve McClendon at that press conference following the pick of Alameda Ta'amu. So Ziggy's going to be your left defensive end right now going forward. This season is the season that we expect Ziggy to boom or bust and not be so-called average, if you ask me. So that's kind of my thoughts been on him all along here. He has showed some flashes here and there. Just needs to get more consistent, in my opinion.
excuse me, Ken also asked about when you're watching film, Dave, where you find stuff. Is it mostly going through ESPN3 games, or where do you see the stuff that you see?
Mostly YouTube, ESPN3 for full games, and some occasional stuff off the torrent sites from the underground and all like that. ESPN3, if your cable company probably already allows you access to it, you don't know it. So there's one way to find out. Just go to ESPN3 and try to do a search on some of the past games there and see what you can pull up. But YouTube's been very good about it as well. Normally that's highlights, though. I usually like to take a good 20-play selection from about three games on kids when I look at film there. We also have another question from a Ken. I'm not sure if this is the same Ken, Dave. It came in this morning. Wants to know about left guard versus right guard, particularly as it relates to the handiness of a team. Clearly, it's not simple to just assume a right guard can switch to left guard. More importantly, can a right-handed team switch to a left-handed team more easily? There must be mechanics to which quarterback pivots with the ball. If we became a lefty team, would Ben have to learn new mechanics? Maybe someone could run stats on how many times he pivoted last year. That's a great, great question. And, you know, teams around the league with a right-handed cornerback are balanced and can run to the left-hand side. I think it all plays mostly into your personnel and how they excel at the position of whether or not you run right or left.
Yes, yes, that's the most important thing.
I mean, look at the Steelers the last few years and you know, last several years for that matter. When you had Alan Faneca there at left guard pulling to the right-hand side, and you had the tackles, Willie Colon had a couple of great seasons, no matter what anybody wants to tell you, at right tackle before he got injured there. They were a right-handed team. And, you know, last year they just did not have the confidence, I do not think, being able to run to the left side behind Kimoatu, behind Max Starks when he took over there, Jonathan Scott at the early part of the season, they just couldn't run that direction. And I think personnel had a lot to do with it. This is going to be a great question. When I get one of the offensive linemen on there, perhaps like Max Starks or maybe Trey Essex into this offseason here, I'm going to make sure I ask these guys, how important it is to that. A lot of speculation is David DeCastro will switch to the left-hand side. That's only speculation, you know, and of how us fans would probably most likely would like to see the offensive line from all those years of being right-handed team and seeing the left guard pull to the right-hand side. Yeah, there's nothing to say that this kid won't be a right guard and the Steelers will become more of a left-handed team, but we'll find out a little bit about more of this going into offseason, into training camp. And like I said, we'll try to get an interview with offensive linemen and find out just how easy it is for a team to switch from a right-handed to a left-handed team. That's a great question, Ken.
It is a great question. And Dave, we're gonna wrap up our part here. We've got a stack of questions here, and we're gonna get to these over the next month. So keep sending them in. We'll keep touching on them. We appreciate all the questions. In our last podcast, Dave, we asked for some feedback as we think about how maybe we can monetize this podcast. We spent a lot of time on it. Obviously, we do it because we love doing it. But if we can also make a few dollars at it, that would be helpful for both of us. And we got some great feedback. So I won't go through the names and what people wrote, but we really appreciate it. We got 30 or 40 responses to this. Thank you very much for taking the time to get back to us. Dave and I have decided this is what we're going to do. We're going to have Dave has put up a donation, PayPal donation button on his website, SteelerDepot.com. And this is something that we're just going to mention once at the end of each show. If you want to buy us a beer or a cup of coffee and want to make a donation, that'd be great. We got our first donation today, and it's worth saying that was a really nice thing for us to see that Dave had put that up yesterday, and we got an email today with a very nice donation from Chris. And Chris, I just want to tell you were first. That means a lot to us, and we appreciate the response we've gotten in this thing. So there's no pressure to do this. We're not gonna charge anybody for it. It's gonna continue to be free. I realize different people have different levels of being able to support other people and doing this type of stuff. So it's as you feel, and we appreciate everything everybody's done for us, just making this thing a popular thing. So Dave, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, great feedback, as David said. If you want to go to PayPal, you can donate to the email address admin@steelersdepot.com. And just do that. And as David said, we're not going to pester people. We're going to mention it once at the end of every show. If you feel like this is worthwhile and want to buy David a beer or me a cup of coffee, feel free. But this is the last time during a show that you're going to hear about this from us. It'll be at the end of the show. We might mention it here and there.
Okay. And Dave, you had an interview with the undrafted free agent guard from Furman. This is the guy that you liked. You've seen some tape on it. I was unable to make this, but why don't you just give us a little intro before we get into that interview?
Yeah, I had time to sit down with Ryan Lee after he signed as an undrafted free agent guard out of Furman. Some great tape on him on YouTube where he held his own against Florida. He's created quite a buzz, and I went back and watched a little bit of film on him. This is a guy that is extremely excited to contribute us as whatever way he can for the Steelers. It's a good 15-minute or so interview, and I hope you enjoy it. Make sure you follow him on Twitter as well, and let him know you heard his interview on A Terrible Podcast as well. I'm sure he would appreciate it.
Yeah, and we got a lot of great feedback on your interview with Kelvin Beecham, the guard from SMU, who came on the show right after he got drafted. So great stuff for you tracking those guys down, and they seem to have fun, and they're thrilled to be part of the Steeler family. And when they hear from people out there listening, it means a lot to them as well. So once again, thank you so much for all your support. Stay tuned for Dave's interview with
Ryan Lee.
With Ryan Lee, right, the guard from Furman. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.
Welcome back to The Terrible Podcast. I'm pleased to be joined by one of the Steelers' unrestricted free agents that they signed following the draft. He's created quite a buzz in the comment section on SteelersDepot.com. A lot of guys got their eyes on him. I am, of course, talking about Ryan Lee. Guard out of Furman. Ryan, welcome to the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Listen, Ryan, count us down. Give us a little, first of all, congratulations, I should say. I know it's got to be an exciting time in your life right now, getting signed as an undrafted. I know you'd much rather have gotten drafted there, but at least you got hooked on as an undrafted free agent. Tell us what the final, couple hours are like, for a player such as yourself there.
It was very exciting. I just want to say, I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to be a Steeler. There's not a better organization in football, and, couldn't be more pleased where I ended up at. But the last couple of, hours, leading up till I signed my contract, I was with a bunch of friends and family and just hanging out actually on the golf course, trying to have a good time and keep my mind off everything. And we had actually thought that Pittsburgh was going to take me in the seventh round with one of their four picks. And then when they didn't, that's when it was kind of like, well, what's going to happen now? And then as soon as the draft ended, I got a phone call and was told that I was a Pittsburgh Steeler and couldn't have been happier.
Now, you worked out, you had to have your pro day, I believe, at Coastal Carolina. Did the Steelers show up for that, or was there any scouts from the Steelers there?
We did have a pro day at Furman.
Oh, okay.
And so we did have our pro day at Furman, had a great pro day, and the Steelers were there. And I went to Coastal Carolina and just did position work, and the Steelers were there also.
Okay, so you knew that they had a little bit of interest in you heading into the draft there.
Yes, sir. I actually talked with the scout that was at our pro day. I believe it was Rooney Jr. that was at our pro day. So I talked with him quite a bit there, and I really enjoyed talking to him and knew that, there would be some interest there.
Now, you list your measurables, I think, at the pro day it's being reported 6'3", 310 pounds. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir, that is.
And 40 reps on the bench, huh?
Yes, sir. Had a good day out there.
I would say so. And listen, I think what's creating a lot of the buzz for you, and I watch a lot of film, and unfortunately we do, it's hard to get a hold of a lot of Furman film, but there's some good clips of you when you played Florida there, and it really looked like you held your own against Florida. Do you remember what you graded out in that game?
I don't know what my exact grade was because that was our last game of the year. And so our offensive line coach, didn't grade it like he normally would. But I know he did get back to me and told me that I played very, very well that game and, did have one of the higher grades. So it was definitely, quite possibly my best game of the year, considering the talent level I was playing against compared to what we were used to playing against. And, had a blast playing against them and, looking forward to playing against even better talent now.
Absolutely. And I've seen some stuff where maybe the center position is a second position for you. Have you done much work at center?
I did not play any center at Furman, but when I went to the AstroTurf NFLPA All-Star game, I played strictly center in that game and transitioned to it very smoothly. Did not have any problem snapping and moving. And, felt like, I played – very well in that game considering it was the first time I'd played center and felt pretty natural at it.
And you look like you moved pretty well. I believe you clocked in somewhere like a 4.99 or a 5.05 40 time. You look like you're pretty agile on film too.
That's one thing I kind of pride myself in is making sure I really take care of my body. I've always been a really hard worker, and that's what I contribute all that to. It's just I always live in the weight room and on the field, always trying to get better, and that's what I can attribute that to. Is I just make sure I stay as quick and fast as I can and as big and lean.
The Steelers like to run a lot of that power, a lot of the 22 power and stuff like that, and the counter pike and all. What type of offense did you run predominantly at Furman? Did y'all run a lot of power, a lot of trapping?
Yes, sir. My first 3 years, we ran predominantly spread, but my last year, we switched to a pro-style offense, and we ran strictly, power, isolation, and it was just a lot of hard downhill running, and that's what suits me a lot better, and, that's what I really enjoy blocking in that type of scheme.
What would you say, what were the scouts and all kind of telling you? Were they, any things that they were suggesting that you kind of needed to work on before hitting the mini camps and the OTA sessions?
It was a few just minor things, is that a few little technical things aren't brushed up quite as much as a guy coming from a bigger school. But, the physical attributes, they all told me, are definitely, more than present. And it's just a few of the little technical things that I'm going to have to, brush up on as I get to camp. And, some things that I actually have been working on brushing up with a retired offensive line coach at the facility I work out at in Atlanta.
You pretty good when they get you on the board and all like that?
Yes, sir. That's what I really pride myself in, is, being a good run blocker and being able to get some, good push and move guys off the ball.
Fantastic. Now, you haven't been to Pittsburgh. This will be your first trip to Pittsburgh. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it will.
I tell you. First of all, what kind of reaction have you gotten from Steeler Nation? I know a lot of them probably don't know that you're on Twitter yet. We're going to fix that here pretty soon. But what kind of response have you gotten from a lot of the Steeler Nation?
It has been tremendous. And I always, knew Pittsburgh had a great following and everything like that, but I had no clue how warm of a welcome, the fans would give me and the type of response they would have. And it's been tremendous.
And I imagine when they get you up to Pittsburgh this weekend here, you're going to see those six Lombardis and all up in there and all the history and all that go along with the Steelers. So, and I'm sure that you're going to probably be in for a huge surprise when you get up there. What are you kind of expecting, this weekend?
I'm just excited. I get to meet all the coaches, all the staff, meet my new teammates and all the rookies that are going to be up there, and hopefully, get to do a little football. And, I know we'll get, plenty of that in there. I think we're probably going to try to, install as much as we can to the offense and, learn as much football as we can, and hopefully get out there on the field and, get to prove myself a little bit.
I guess it's pretty hard for small school type players such as yourself, and I think a lot of the buzz, like I said, is being created about you right now. The Steelers only signed 12 or 13 undrafted free agents, and of all the names on there, a lot of people are asking me about Ryan Lee, so I've been forced to go back and watch a little bit of film, and I gotta admit, that game against Florida, I really think it showed what you have. And the Steelers, of course, they drafted David DeCastro with the first-round pick, and he's going to be one of the guards. But there is a little bit of speculation that one of those guards spots, could be open, maybe at depth position as well, too. So, the way you run block, I think you got a good shot at the roster this year.
Absolutely, and, that's my goal coming in is, obviously, any type of competitor, you want to be on the field and you want to play. And, that's obviously my number one goal. But at the same time, you got to be realistic with yourself, but I'm going to do everything I can to, make that week one starting lineup. And if not, then hopefully it'll put myself at the worst on the 53-man roster. And so, got to set high goals for yourself and, and hope for the best and just keep working hard and do what I've been doing, and hopefully everything keeps working out.
Give us one or two things at Steeler Nation, probably, you know, in all the reading on the internet that we probably don't know about Ryan Lee.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Here's something is that I actually played college baseball as well.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What position?
First base.
Did you really? Good mitt then. And you got the height to go along with it, so I could definitely envision that. Well, Ryan, listen, I don't want to take up too much of your time tonight, but I want to let you know that the blogs and the forums in Steeler Nation, your name is definitely out there. You create a lot of buzz, like I said, as one of the undrafted free agents. And when you get up there to Latrobe in training camp, I think you're going to be just amazed with the response of Steeler Nation and all like that. And I want to congratulate you, and welcome you to the Steeler family. And we wish you nothing but the best when you get up there competing for that roster spot up there.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I have a long career in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I want to thank the Steeler Nation for giving me such a warm welcome. And I'm glad to be a part of it.
And you can follow Ryan on Twitter at RLee75. And, Ryan, once again, thanks for joining us on the Terrible Podcast.
All right, thank you, Dave. I appreciate you having me.